Grazie ħafna kum l-ventar mafsena tepli kullħat nil-għakum għal din il-laqqa numru 16 l-lum 3-10 ta' ottubru ta' s-sena kurrenti li fija l-uniku item fuq l-agenda hija diskussjoni mal-Inter-Agency Working Group mill-pajjiż tal-Ġorġja. Id-delegazzjoni tiġa tinsabmana nil-qal il-din id-delegazzjoni. Una mill-introduzzjoni tal-Kumitat. First of all, thank you very much for your meeting. Today I welcome you to Parliament. There have been ongoing discussions between both countries. We have received your speaker. I personally met also the chair, my counterpart, recently in Madrid and discussed basically the Georgia's accession to the European Union, and now we have this meeting, which is a continuous proof of the excellent bilateral ties between both countries. May I also express the commitment to continue building on the long-standing bilateral relations, especially on the Parliament side. Through the existing and new areas of bilateral cooperation. We look forward to also promote trade flows and further exploring avenues of commercial collaborations with Georgia. I thank you very much, and please make your comments.
Thank you very much.
So, good afternoon, and thank you very much, dear Chair, dear colleagues, for taking your time and welcoming us here in this building in the Parliament. So I absolutely agree with you. Our bilateral relations are developing in an excellent and very good and intensive dynamic way, also thanks to our ambassador here. And definitely we are looking forward to taking these relations even further advance. I was asked by the chair of the Committee on European Integration of Georgia, the colleague you met in Madrid, to pass her greetings. I met her before leaving for Malta. So as you rightly mentioned, we are an interagency working group, and let me start by introducing the members of the team. I will start with Ms. Maga Peradze. She is Head of Human Rights Secretariat of the Administration of the Government of Georgia. Ms. Ninish Augulida, she is Deputy Chief of Staff of the Speaker of Parliament. I myself am Director for European Integration in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Of course, His Excellency Ambassador Konstantinos Oguladze, and our dear colleague from the Ministry of Justice, Head of EU Department, Mr. Nukri Dundua, and our dear colleague, Mr. Hirakli Vekua from the Embassy. Yeah, so we've been touring around. We are doing tour the capital. We've already visited 23 EU member states, because we strongly believe in dialogue, in communication, in regular updates and exchange, because implementation of 12 priorities in general, accession to the EU is a very big issue in Georgia. It's even a constitutional norm that obliges any Georgian institution, any government institution, any official to invest all efforts to advance on that path in order to accomplish the goal of Georgia's EU membership. At this stage, I would really like to thank Malta for your continuous and consistent support. And I briefly mentioned very good and excellent bilateral relations that are developing, and we definitely see and feel these good relations that we are taking together further. So why we started all this exercise, because I've already mentioned it's about staying engaged, to stay transparent, inclusive, not only with regard to the domestic implementation process, and here I mean the whole implementation process has been designed in a way, the structure of the implementation process domestically, that ensures not only participation of lawmakers, policymakers, government representatives, but most importantly so, civil society representatives too, but also transparency and inclusiveness. And I've mentioned here with regard to our partners in the capitals of member states. We've already visited 24 capitals. We hope to accomplish our mission by mid-November before the Council takes a decision. By time to time, we go back to Brussels to exchange, to update our colleagues in the EU institutions, especially in the Commission DG NEA, DG Just. I will share with you the implementation progress report. This is the progress report. And later, with your permission, we'll try to walk you through priority by priority and give you a brief update what has been done in that regard.
This will be reviewed in October.
Yes,
but in a report which will be...
So this is the, our implementation progress report, but we expect for the Commission to prepare the assessment of three countries, Georgia, Ukraine, and Moldova, beginning of November. It was supposed to be done end of October, but it was postponed till early November, and then, of course, the Council decision mid-December later this year. So just to give you a brief glimpse and overview of what we have done, so I will underline that over 100 pieces of legislation have been amended and adopted in the course of the implementation of these 12 priorities. Several institutions were put in place, like the Anti-Corruption Bureau, but also Special Investigative Service and Personal Data Protection Service also were set up and to address those priorities, but also topics that go beyond this implementation process. A brief remark about the structure of the implementation process. There are three layers of the implementation process. One is the working group. 9 working groups were set up in the Parliament to address the respective priorities, and civil society organizations were also invited to nominate 2 representatives per working group, so that right now 18 members of civil society organizations contribute and take active part in the implementation process. And of course, the second layer is the committee hearings, where the lawmakers, members of parliament, but also colleagues from different agencies, and also the civil society representatives take part in hearings and in discussions. And the third layer is, the plenary voting, where the final voting takes place to adopt the legislation that are needed to address those priorities. I would like to also mention here that the work that we have done, or especially the members of the Parliament, these are not only technical, only superficial work, but definitely the legislation that was adopted, it has systemic, sometimes even strategic character, and we are really looking forward to a positive assessment and decision later this year, because absolutely, honestly, we believe strongly, and that's not only our assessment, that's also assessment of the analytical report that was published earlier this year, and we strongly believe, based on that report, that Georgia not only qualifies for the candidate status, but we deserve this. We are not looking for any shortcuts. We understand that the accession and the membership, it's a very lengthy and complex process, but we really would like for our partners in the member states to take decision that is fair, that is merit-based, and decision should also reflect progress as much as we deserve this. And so when we discuss into more details about priorities, you will see that we've done we've accomplished quite a lot. And our mission here is also, because, in Georgia, the whatever relates to European integration is very important, obviously, and it's very big. Because of that, it's also sometimes very much emotional and very much politicized. And our mission here is not to advocate any, party political agenda, but to advocate the process itself, to try to display that much has been done and our expectations are based on real work accomplished. Unless you have questions at this stage.
I shall introduce also my committee members, which are Honourable Dr. DeMarco, Honourable Bernice Bonello, Rebecca Buttigieg, Davina Samutili, and Dr. Alex Borch. Obviously, as a country, have been supportive of the monetary mission from its inception, and it is the Malta's policy in favor of actively in favor of accession, but on a merit-based accession process. I don't know whether any of the members have questions so far. No, so please.
And I mentioned the analytical report. The analytical report divides 33 chapters into six clusters, big clusters. And based on that report, Georgia leads in three out of six clusters, leads compared to Ukraine and Moldova, the countries that received the candidate status last year. And these three chapters being really fundamental chapters, like the fundamentals, rule of law, justice, freedom, security, but also clusters like competitiveness and inclusive growth, access to internal market. So that's why we really believe that the decision later this year will be positive. So I will briefly walk you through priority by priority. I will try not to take much of your time, so I will be brief, but please at any time, at any stage, should you have questions, please interrupt me and put forward your questions, because one of the reasons why we've been visiting member states is not only from our side to share what we've been doing, but definitely to address any open issues that might exist or to answer to questions you may have. Because this is how we look at this implementation process. It's a dialogue, it's communication, and regular exchange. So from our perspective, we have implemented around 80 to 85% of these 12 priorities, with some, let's say, priorities or topics still to be addressed, like the judiciary, like the fight against organized crime. Here, mostly we are talking about the recommendations from Moneyval, but also priority on media environment. So we have already sent the pieces of legislation and recent amendments, be it on judiciary and the areas I've mentioned, to the Venice Commission, and yesterday they returned their legal opinion. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to read the document into details, but definitely we will be updating you and following up on this legal opinion later. Priority number one, depolarization, a very specific, complex issue. We think Georgia's society is as much polarized, if we can use this word, as any society in the European Union. In that regard, we do not fall out from the general trend. And I also mentioned that this implementation process and whatever is related to you is very much emotional. So that's why we see this priority here among the 12 priorities, but limited to this implementation process. And that was also our question when we, for the first time, discussed this issue with the Commission, how to address this issue, how to understand it. Because at the initial stage, we also had some difficulties of understanding what the measures are, what the benchmarks are, what is really or actually expected from us. And the message from the Commission was, should the political parties cooperate and manage to cooperate in order to address priorities, then from their perspective, these priorities will be addressed. And on the page before the last page in this brochure, you see the table where we have analysed the votings in the Parliament, so meaning that what political parties represented in the Parliament voted for which piece of legislation that addresses one or the other priority, and you can see that despite sometimes big differences that political parties have, they still manage to cooperate in this regard. But also to decrease the level of polarisation, if I use this word, the Speaker of the Parliament invited or adopted the open door policy, meaning that the Parliament offered not only to political parties their active role and engagement contribution to this process, but we have invited also civil society organizations. For that purpose, we reached out to the Georgian National Platform or the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum. And we did it because in Georgia we have over 500 NGOs and CSO. And you can imagine that not all of them could be part of the process, just physically impossible. And since this Georgian National Platform speaks on behalf of over 250 NGOs and civil society organizations, including those with strong regional and rural profile. So we reached out to them and invited to be part of the implementation process. And since then, I mentioned that they have nominated two representatives per working group. And in addition to that, the Speaker of the Parliament launched a series of high-level conferences where members of Parliament, government representatives, but most important, so civil society representatives also take place. They discuss issues also beyond these 12 priorities. So, and the process continues. So this is also from our side to address this polarization issue. Priority number two, guarantee of well-functioning of state institutions. Compared to several members of the European Union, Georgia is relatively new or young parliamentary republic. Since last elections, Georgia is fully parliamentary republic, and we're in the middle of building this tradition where parliament executes and oversight functions over the government. In that regard, to address this priority, rules of procedures were amended in the parliament in a way that simplifies procedures for calling in thematic inquiries, ministers, interpellations, ministers' hours were introduced so that the members of cabinet and prime minister personally reports back to the members of parliament, and members of parliament they question sometimes, even grill the members of cabinet by the parliament. Also, to address this issue, the code, electoral code was amended, and the new development here is introduction of electronic voting systems. During the next elections, 90% of those eligible to vote in Georgia will cast their votes using electronic voting systems. And it's a quite novelty in our country, but also to ensure and strengthen the level playing field for political parties taking part in the elections, the caps were introduced for party financing, so that the political parties have more or less the same let's say amount of financial resources to campaign during the election, but also the fines were increased for the potential cases should they take place for the abuse of administrative resources. Complaints, they were also the procedures for filing complaints simplified, but also recounting procedures were simplified. Inking procedures were improved so that it's now 100% mandatory for those eligible to vote to be inked, because until recently a very small portion of population, especially those with different levels of kinds of handicaps and disabilities, were exempted from the inking procedures, but this time it's fully covered now.
Yeah. So voting is... mandatory. Is voting mandatory in Georgia?
No, it is not.
So I thought you said...
No, the inking will be mandatory.
The
inking? The putting marks for those who are eligible to...
somebody to vote twice, so
yeah.
They have
okay.
Marked.
Okay.
So this
when
is the...
Yeah. Screen, it means that you already voted.
Yeah.
And how would you, when you say party financing, how do you define a political party? Is a political party those who are represented in parliament, or any organization calls itself a political party can have party financing?
Any party that fulfills certain criteria to be registered as, eligible subject to take part in the elections, of course they can campaign. But what I the new development here is that the caps were introduced to the limits were introduced how much parties can spend during the election campaign, so that the political parties have relatively same amounts of money, because otherwise it would put richer political parties in an advantageous position than those with relatively less financial resources. Here also, these are actually the key developments and novelties, and in the report you have more details what was done in that regard. With it, with your permission, I will move on the priority number 3, judicial reform. It's a very big key reform like other priorities too. But we have started this judicial reform not only after the 12 priorities were identified, but this wave of judicial reform is preceded by other 3 waves of judicial reform in the past. But here, novelty in the new developments, new steps that we are taking is the amendments introduced to respective legislation that regulates the election of judges, but also non-judge members to the High Council of Justice. And since the election of high member, non-judge members to the High Council of Justice requires qualified majority vote in the parliament, until recently the parliament succeeded in electing 3 out of 5 judges on vacant positions.
So how are judges appointed? Or are they elected by a parliamentary vote?
Yes. I mean, I'm talking here about the non-judge members to the High Council of Justice. But the judges are being elected, and please correct me if I'm mistaken, by an independent institution, which is the Conference of Judges. So, yeah. And I guess there are 300 members of, more or less over 500 maybe, members of judges themselves who elect judges to different courts. But here I'm talking about the High Justice of Council.
What are the functions of this?
Which is the governing body of...
governing body of the, administrative organizational issues. Promoting, so dismissing it.
Yeah, like secondment, administrative measures, etc. 5 positions were vacant for some time because it needed so qualified majority votes in the parliament, and as mentioned, the political parties managed to elect 3 out of 5, and consultations continue between the political parties to appoint remaining 2 members of judges. And recent amendments introduced to the legislation we also sent to the Venice Commission, and yesterday we received their legal opinion, and we will follow up on updating in that regard. Priority number 4 is strengthening of anti-corruption, fight against the corruption. Generally, Georgia performs very well over the past decade, even 2 decades, in terms of fighting organized crimes. This is the assessment of different prominent international organizations. But to address this issue, an anti-corruption bureau was set up by Georgia that not only addresses issues like conflict of interest, property, or asset declarations, also measures to strengthen the protection of whistleblowers. But the agency was also supposed to supervise discussions and deliberations on who would be qualified as oligarch or not. And I mentioned here was supposed, because the draft law that regulated this issue was voted down in the Parliament of Georgia in 3rd reading, because that has been recommendation from the Venice Commission and the European Commission, because the draft law, it was a little bit complex issue, and I will combine these 2 priorities here, because when we saw the priority de-oligarchization, it was there was no experience what to look at. So what we did, we just copy-pasted the draft law that existed at that time, Ukrainian draft law on de-oligarchization, and because it was welcomed as a bold step and praised by the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, as a strong step towards addressing the oligarchic influences in public but also political life, we thought we would just copy-paste it. But then, based on different rounds of consultations we had with DigiJust, the Venice Commission, it has become clear that the preference was to adopt a systemic, so-called systemic approach, meaning that you wouldn't define criteria in the legislation for a person who can be designated as an oligarch, but put in place legal framework, that different pieces of legislation that would address this issue, and I'm here meaning the legislation on media, legislation on party financing, fight against organized crime, corruption, public procurement, etc. And this is the path that we've been pursuing now, and that's why the draft law that existed, that was based on personal approach, was voted down in the parliament, and we have the government adopted recently the de-oligarchization action plan, which also addresses these issues, and it was sent to the Venice Commission, to the Commission, and we continue consultations to see how we translate it into different pieces of legislation. And here I would also mention two other agencies that we have put in place. One is the Special Investigative Service that is dealing with crimes committed by public servants. And to support the activities, budget has been doubled for this service, and regional offices were also set up so that they can coordinate their work, not only centralized but also in regions and other, let's say, remote areas of Georgia. And also the service that the Personal Data Protection Service, and the piece of legislation that was passed by the Parliament that regulates the activity of this service was also harmonized with the respective directive in the European Union. Priority number six, fight against organized crime. Here too, Georgia has a very good track record of fighting organized crime. We belong among the top 50 countries in the world that has low criminality and high resilience. And I'm talking here about countries, for example, only 19 members of the European Union also belong among these 50 countries. But to address these priorities and take a step further, the action plan was adopted on fight against organized crime that addresses issues like human trafficking, terrorist financing, but also cyber criminality and drugs-related crimes. And a new novelty here, if I can say so, is the adoption of or amendments to the Penitentiary Code that puts emphasis on rehabilitation, reconciliation, resocialization rather than punitive approach to this issue. And last but not definitely not least, the manual recommendations. Most of them have been already taken over and implemented, and we continue consultations and are expecting, actually, we have shared the pieces of legislation to address the remaining manual recommendations, and we expect the legal opinion early December this year. And here we are talking mostly about the Beneficiary Ownership Registry, which is the recommendation to set to put in place this kind of registry in Georgia. And recently we have also adopted the National Risk Assessment document that has been sent to the government for final approval, and this decision is also pending. On media environment, that's actually the only priority that from the Commission's perspective hasn't been addressed yet. I'll be absolutely honest and open here. This is the assessment that we do not share, because media environment in Georgia is definitely pluralistic and pretty very much diverse. That's not my assessment. This is the assessment, recent assessment of Rapporteurs Without Border, the March 2023 assessment, that I quote says that media environment in Georgia is diverse with regional and with regional media and radio broadcasting growing in strength. To address this priority here, we also introduced amendments to the law on public broadcaster that was harmonized with Audiovisual Media Services Directive of the European Union. Here we have a little bit, how should I put it, a little bit specific situation, because on the one hand we have a strong recommendation from the Council of Europe, which is also supported by the civil society organizations in Georgia, to leave the media space as they regulate it in Georgia as it is right now. because media environment is deregulated in our country, including social media. But then, on the other hand, we have also a strong recommendation from the Commission to fully harmonize legislation on media with the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, meaning regulate, for example, areas like definition of hate speech, inflammatory rhetoric, but also the protection of minors against improper content. So we had several rounds of discussions with the Commission, and we hope that we will close this chapter soon so that we reach an agreement how to proceed with that. Our expectation is that we will leave the media environment as deregulated as it is right now. I will be absolutely open and honest here because this is why we have come here. One of the issues here being the some cases of violence against the journalists that took place in Georgia. No one denies that. But our position is that even though those isolated single cases took place, so they shouldn't be made representative for the whole media environment. And important is that none of those cases remains without the law enforcement agencies reacting upon them. And in the course of investigations, 38 persons were charged with different sentences with regard to the cases of violence used against the journalists. In several cases, even after they had been contested by the persons in question, their charges were severe. Priority number 8, the human rights protection of vulnerable group. I will just skip this for a moment and move on priority number 10 and 11 because I will ask a colleague from the Garments Administration to really briefly update you on what has been done to address this priority. I have skipped priority number 9 because from the European Commission's perspective, this priority has been fully addressed, and not to waste much of your time, I will just skip it. Priority number 10, participation of civil society organizations in decision-making at all level, actually. A little bit strange definition and for wording for the priority. And I mentioned the open door policy that still stands. The civil society representatives are actively taking part in the implementation process. I also mentioned the series of high-level conferences that were launched by the Parliament in coordination and close cooperation with the civil society organizations. And I mentioned the Georgian National Platform that was invited to be part of this process. But I have a little bit difficulty understanding this priority completely because participation and recommendations, contribution for civil society organizations are very much welcomed and pretty much encouraged, but still the ultimate decision-making in a democracy is reserved to democratically elected representatives. So we should continue also some work on managing expectations on the civil society side, organization side. Priority number 12, the election of public defender in Georgia. Public defender has traditionally been a very strong institution. It's a quite closely affiliated institution, parliamentary tool for oversight of the over the government in the area of human rights. From December last year to March this year, the position was vacant, also because it required the qualified majority vote in the parliament, meaning that the political party needed to find a compromise for a person to be elected the public defender. And in March this year, we succeeded in electing opposition vice speaker of the parliament as public defender of Georgia. Here I will conclude and will ask very briefly Margaret to update us on human rights, and Nukri also very briefly on priority number 11.
Yes, thank you. So priority number 8 recommends country to enhance efforts for the protection of the human rights and focus on the protection of the vulnerable groups. To this end, let me emphasize that Georgia is a part of all core treaties, which provides standards and provisions for the better protection of the human rights, but we also decided to have the unified policy paper, the national policy paper, on our place, on our table. So we elaborated the national strategy for the protection of the human rights for the next decade. So this document is eligible and valid till 2030. The elaboration process was very interesting. It was inclusive. We invited all international organizations and NGOs working on human rights issues, and also PDO was also involved in the elaboration process. So the document was elaborated by the government of Georgia and then submitted to the parliament for the final approval. This document covers all fundamental human rights and freedoms, of course, and what is also important to emphasize, it is fully in line with the sustainable development goals. So it has four main priorities. The first one is focusing on the civil and political rights. The second one is focusing on the economic and social rights. The third one provides provisions for the implementation of the constitutional guarantees for equality, and it calls state institutions to elaborate internal policies on anti-discrimination provisions, and it calls also state agencies to raise capacity of the authorities for the better protection of the vulnerable groups, of course, and the better investigation of the crimes committed on the basis of the hate, discrimination, and intolerance, as well as improve the prosecution processes in this regard. So the fourth priority is focusing on the protection of the and other vulnerable groups in Georgia, citizens affected by the occupation of the Georgian territories by Russian Federation, and here we are talking about the citizens living on the occupied territories as well as the next to the occupied lines. So in aim to fulfill all of these four priorities, which also has its own goals and indicators, right now my office working with the civil society to elaborate the national action plan, as I said, for the implementation of all four priorities set by the strategy. So the national action plan will have the specific objectives, the measurable activities, indicators, time frame, of course, also its own budget for the implementation of all activities, and of course the responsible state agencies and the administration of the government will be in charge to monitor and support the implementation of this national action plan. Again, we invited all international organizations working in Georgia, as well as civil society, municipalities, PDO office and line ministries to elaborate this national action plan, as we want to have it more very inclusive of the process and to have to keep this elaboration process transparent as much as it is possible. So we hope that at the end of this year we will have the final draft of this national action plan, which will be adopted by the government and will be mandatory for the implementation. So should I skip the priority number 9? As you mentioned, it was fully addressed, so that means that a lot of has been done to achieve this priority number 9 on gender equality.
Just still to follow up on on the gender equality, just to mention here that in Georgia we have gender quotas, meaning that for the general elections, central elections, every fourth person on the party list should be of different gender. Also, financial incentives were introduced for political parties to increase participation of different genders in the politics. But at the municipal level, the quota is every second person should be of different gender.
A if I may just elaborate on this perhaps, what is the level of participation of women in politics at this stage prior to the gender quota being introduced?
Not really high, but still about 20%.
Thank you, first of all, for joining us today and giving us a brief about your progress with regards to EU accession. I would like to know, because till this very day, Georgia hasn't taken any of the Western sanctions with regards to Russia, and it hasn't been vocal with regards to Moscow's actions against Ukraine. Given the EU's position, because Malta is neutral, but given the EU's position with regards to the sanctions it put against Russia's invasion on Ukraine, can you give us Georgia's position with regards to the Russia and Ukraine invasion, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
So Georgia from the very beginning has strongly supported Ukraine, and there is no question about us having a different position. Firstly, I mean, Georgia cannot sympathize with Russia for a simple reason. Georgia's territory is occupied by Russia. And since 2008, we are in an open war. So the fact that there is no, let's say, fighting going on at a larger scale doesn't mean that this occupation doesn't exist. On a daily basis, you see people being kidnapped, put in prison, killed. Territories, I mean the so-called occupation line, put forward deeper into our territory. When it comes to sanction, Georgia is fully in line with the international sanctions imposed against Russia, and that's not only my assessment and the assessment of my government, but that's the assessment of three special envoys that visited Georgia a month ago, if I'm not mistaken, the special envoy of the European Union on sanctions, special envoy of the United States, and the special envoy of the UK, and they praised Georgia's efforts in that regard. Georgia has not introduced national sanctions against Russia, but we implement those international sanctions that we have put in place. No single case, contrary to some assertions, and I mentioned that this whole process is very much emotional, and that's also part of these emotions and headlines, because time to time you saw headlines that we didn't know where they come from, we are not substantiated, but no single case has ever been put forward against Georgia that would substantiate any even suggestions that Georgia is avoiding sanctions. I will tell you one example for how those kind of perceptions are being generated. And I'm being here absolutely honest. A couple of months ago, one high-ranking Ukrainian official made a statement publicly as if Georgia was helping Russia to avoid sanctions. The person gave an interview to Reuters, and you can imagine the media coverage of this single source. When we ask the person, I mean, what is his statement based on? What are the evidence? Because, I mean, no one is perfect. We may oversee something, overlook something, and it's also been something that we proactively have been reaching out to our partners. Should we oversee something, please let us know. And when we ask the person, the reply was, I did it preventively. But, you know, the damage caused and no one cares about afterwards whether that's true or not. And you see many, many things like this. On the contrary, to address even those perceptions and sometimes misperceptions, sometimes even disinformation, we've been proactively reaching out DG FISMA, for example, and different EU agencies. I myself accompanied my minister, twice to Brussels to talk to colleagues from DG FISMA and to, let's say, discuss details, to, let's say, try to disperse any doubts about that. We sent the head of Georgia's maritime agency to Brussels, again to DG FISMA, also to talk to other colleagues, because our agency has uncovered at one point what we call a shadow fleet, a scheme of shadow fleet, a fleet of different vessels tasked by Russia or commissioned by Russia that were trying to avoid sanctions, trying to bring goods from the European Union to Georgia and then other destinations. Over 1,200 such attempts have been prevented on our side. So when it comes to Ukraine, we have not only supported them, we have sent hundreds of tons of humanitarian aid, and we have co-sponsored many, many resolutions in different organizations, and we joined statements and declarations over some hundred statements and declarations on that. We haven't introduced national sanctions because, for obvious reason, and I mentioned occupation, because we are in a very peculiar situation. And the Russians are really very good at using right time for wrong things. And the problem with Russia is unpredictability. You never know how they react to what. And given the very peculiar security situation, yes, we have adopted a little bit cautious approach on that. Otherwise, I mean, no doubt about where Georgia stands and where Georgia's allegiances are.
In fact, you've touched upon the issues in the region, but in your opinion, to what extent the issues in the region are affecting Georgia's status with the European Union? I mean, there are various issues. There is Ukraine, there is the occupation, the Russian issue, and other issues ongoing in that area, in that region.
Definitely developments in the region, they directly affect us, be it security-wise, be it economy-wise. But the question is how we react to them. And and that's also part of us adopting a little bit cautious, prudent, pragmatic approach, if I may say so, because we don't want to cause extra problems. And Georgia actually is the only country in the region, one of the, let's say, islands of stability in the region. Wherever you look at, you see huge conflicts, be it on our western part, it's Ukraine-Russia war, in our immediate neighborhood, Azerbaijan, Armenian over the Nagorno-Karabakh, down to the south, Syria, Turkey also taking some steps in that regard, and now the new, let's say, conflict that erupted in the Middle East. We have no security guarantees, so we are not member of NATO, we are not member of European Union. That's why we have to survive in this environment without having a security umbrella and security guarantee. That requires sometimes more patience, sometimes more pragmatic steps, but the issue is that despite our own huge problem, and I mentioned that people are so much focused on what is going on in Ukraine that sometimes people tend to forget that Russia still continues occupation, has never abandoned the policy of destabilizing Georgia, continuing occupation, using disinformation campaigns, etc., etc., to cause harm there. And yes, every conflict in our neighborhood has a spillover effect.
But how does it affect the status, your status with the European Union, the status of accession? Do you think there is a direct effect of what is going on?
Yes, it does affect, and it makes even more important for the European Union to take geopolitical, strategic, and fair decision to complete this promise that Georgia will become the member of European Union. And this is the best time to take this kind of decision. This is how it affects us.
Mario Domenico.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I just want to follow up on, because I forgot to mention, we are, for example, the colleague mentioned about the alignment, and right now we have relatively low rate of alignment with the CSFP declarations. Definitely it's a temporary development, exactly because of the security situation in our region. Over the past 10 days, we still succeeded in improving our alignment rate, and we increased it from 32 to 44% right now. Definitely, it's not the ideal rate we wished for, but it's an upward trend, and we still have some time to improve our alignment rate with the CSFP declarations. But to address this issue and to make it more easier for us, we proactively have been reaching to our colleagues, not only in the EU institutions, but in the capitals of member states, to help us with two issues. One is the recognition of occupation by member states, the Russia's occupation of Georgian territories. That would definitely be a huge help for us. And B, introducing conditionality in their relations, on EU's relations with third parties, pretty much similar to what we have with the United States, the appropriation bill, meaning that any subject or any country that would take steps and try to establish any kind of illegal contacts of relations with regimes on the occupied territories, they will immediately fall under the sanctions imposed by the United States. We have precedents for that. It's feasible because this relative low rate of alignment cannot only be explained by us not imposing national sanctions on Russia. But there are also countries where we see an increased risk of them recognizing our occupied territories as independent states. And I'm talking here about countries in Africa, countries in Middle East, because we are very cautious of them retaliating by recognizing Georgia's territories, occupied territories, as independent states, should we impose any sanctions on them. So I just wanted to highlight this. Sorry for interrupting you.
First of all, thanks so much, and it is indeed interesting hearing the progress that has taken place. I do appreciate the geopolitical, obviously, challenges that Georgia faces in the current international scenario, and I do also assume that Georgia's application in March 2022 to join the European Union as a full member was also probably a reaction to the geopolitical scenario that the region is currently facing, and to Georgia's desire of secure and sovereign borders. So obviously it's a challenge, and I believe also that Malta has made it very, very clear, even through the presidency of the European Parliamentary Assembly, which is currently held by the Maltese European parliamentarian, that obviously we look forward to an expanded EU. We look forward to the expansion of the EU also eastwards, and I think that is very important. And we look forward to a non-protracted expansion. I think the worst mistake that the EU can make would be if discussions with states that look for a future within the EU could be a long bureaucratic process. We've seen that taking place with other aspiring member states, and there's always a fallout to that. My question is basically, to what extent do you see the accession process taking place on a fast-track basis? To what extent is the application to join the EU something which holds cross-party support within the EU? And to what extent is government also engaging not only civil society but also the general population as to why Georgia wishes to enter the EU? Why? Because from our own experience, obviously, bringing your legislation and making all the necessary reforms to accedes to the priority areas that the Commission indicates to any aspirant EU member state is not always an easy process. Reforms in themselves, be they social, economic, political, are always challenging. And even though they are always meant for the better, and yes, they do make us reach a higher standard, there is often, yes, a price to pay. So to what extent is it being explained to the Georgian people that the price being paid is one which is worth it, which is long-term, and which will help the European people, the Georgian people, achieve also security for its borders, but also democratic and economic higher aspirations?
What benefits they can get from becoming a member of the European Union. But after the decision was taken to recognize Georgia's European perspective, probably they realized that this is within the reach now, the European membership. They have started expressing more interest what exactly EU is. And my conclusion of this is that now that they have decided or, let's say, acknowledged in their minds that sometime within the reachable future they will be part of the European Union. They want to really understand where they will be living in. So, and we've been doing this information campaign. We have a strategy for that, communication strategy, but also in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, under the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we have information center on NATO and EU that does these kind of activities very regularly and communicates quite a lot with the population. Yeah. I'm sorry if I missed any question, please.
Okay, so I don't know whether you have any more comments or remarks to make. So from our end, I believe that we have...
I just would like to thank you for taking your time, for welcoming us here, for hosting us here. Maybe one very humble request on our part. So as we are looking forward to the council decision later this year on candidate status, we count on your support. But our request would be also, should the decision be taken on launching the accession talks with Ukraine and Moldova, we think that Georgia should be also part of that decision, because the last June's decision created what we call negative differentiation, meaning that Ukraine, Moldova, they received candidate status, but Georgia was left behind. So we want to again avoid these kind of negative differentiation, because that resonates quite painfully also with our population, and there are so many questions we have difficulty for explaining. Of course, that's our job and we have to do this, but still sometimes it's very difficult to explain why the country that based on analytical report performs better, is ahead. Not that we are comparing ourselves and want to, let's say, draw lines between our countries, but that creates also a lot of difficulty domestically to explain why we are there without candidate status, and countries that sometimes perform less than we do have candidate status. So of course, it's a political decision to be taken end of this year, but we really expect that the decision is merit-based and it's fair.
Yes, and in fact, the Maltese government has expressed itself as actively in favor of European expansion and based on each country's own merits. I personally have also expressed my position on the issue that Georgia should be included as a candidate, given the huge amount of work that your government has been doing to implement not only these 12 points, because these are the 12 points which needed to be enhanced, but also other areas of the acquis communautaire which need to be implemented before Georgia joins the European Union. Thank you very much for everything.